Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text Number 34. Avichinam, uninterrupted, continuous. Omkara, sacred vibration. Om. Ganta, like a bell. Nada, sound. Bisa unavat, like the fiber running up the lotus stalk. Pranina, by the wind of prana. Udirya, pushing upward. Tatra, therein, at a distance of 12 thumb breaths. Atha, thus. Kuna, again. Samadeshayet, one should join together. Swara, the 15 vibrations produced with Anushvara. Translation. Beginning from the Muladhara chakra, one should move the life air continuously upward like the fibers in the lotus stalk until one reaches the heart, where the sacred syllable Om is situated like the sound of a bell. One should thus continue raising the sacred level upward the distance of 12 angulas, and then the omkara should be joined together with the 15 vibrations produced with Anushvara. Purport by the 7th Srila Prabhupada. Jai. It appears that the yoga system is somewhat technical and difficult to perform. Anushvara refers to a nasal vibration produced after the 15 Sanskrit vowels. The complete explanation of this process is extremely complicated and obviously unsuitable for this age. From this description, we can appreciate the sophisticated achievements of those who in the former ages practiced mystic meditation. Despite such appreciation, however, we should stick firmly to the simple, foolproof method of meditation prescribed for the present age, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Migatamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Chaitanya Manobisam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swami Rupa Gadamayam Dalati Swaparantikam Pancha Kalpaturabhisha Kripa Sinubhya Eva Cha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Abhita Gadadha Shiva Sari Gora Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. So, please forgive me if at some point you can't hear me. I have a lot of mucus stuck, so my apologies for that. So here Krishna of course is continuing to explain this different process of meditation, which Krishna has also explained a little bit in the Dhyana Yoga section in the Bhagavad Gita. So here of course we start hearing of moving different life areas up through the different chakras. So we have the seven different chakras situated in the body in a straight line. And with the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, of course, one gets to raise these life airs until one gradually is able to raise the life air all the way to the crown chakra, the Harasrasra chakra, in which the soul can leave the body through. So just by reading from the translation and just looking at the word for word, we can see how this system of yoga is really very difficult. Like if we can try just to analyze, as Srila Prabhupada speaks in the first line of the purport, that it appears that this yoga system is somehow technical and very difficult to perform. So not only does one have to have the physical strength, but mainly one should have mental stability. One's mind should be at a state where one is willing to tolerate the different urges, and one is willing to actually sit and focus one's energy on moving the life airs up. And in the system of yoga, of course, we haven't even started going as to, you know, focusing on the outward and incoming breath and then merging those for it to become one. So we haven't even got there yet, and still just having to raise the life airs from the lowest chakra upwards is just a tedious task. So of course Lord Krishna in the previous verses, his main aim, as Srila Prabhupada is giving in the purport, is that he's on his way to establishing the supremacy of the process of bhakti yoga, of devotional service. And yes, we do perform our austerities and penances by rising early and only eating certain foodstuffs and all the different activities that we do by chanting japa. But these are all actually in relation to the other processes of yoga. These are all on a more elevated platform, because they don't depend on anything but the sincerity of the practitioner like that. So all these processes actually in yoga practice, all these processes of focusing the mind, focusing the breath, they're actually meant to gradually make us detach from material concepts. So by being able to meditate or being able to fix one's mind, we're gradually supposed to rid ourselves of the body identification. And the expansion of the body identification, of course, goes through to family, you know, your community, nation, all these different ways that we expand our designations. So a simple way to understand this, of course, some people will say, you know, all processes are leading to the same goal and yada yada yada, you know, you do your thing, we do our thing, and we're going to go to the same place. But of course we know that that's just a concoction, that's a misunderstanding of what the Vedic scriptures are teaching. Because in the Vedas we have different sections that are attributed or that are meant to gradually elevate certain people, certain consciousness and certain tendencies gradually over time, over many lifetimes, to actually come to the point of bhakti. So in the discussion when Vajranaya was given class, we ended up speaking about, you know, that element, the special feature of bhakti that makes it different from all other processes, in which all other processes of course also depend on a minute aspect or the different limbs or angas of bhakti. And we can see in the fourth canto when Srila Prabhupada is giving the explanation of the Daksha Yagya, where Lord Shiva goes into a very interesting discussion or intercourse with Daksha, Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain the position of Lord Shiva and how Lord Shiva is responsible for gradually elevating those who are in the lower grades of life gradually over time to the platform of devotional service. So although they're engaging in different yajnas, they're engaging in hearing about certain topics from Lord Shiva himself, they're engaging in worshipping him and offering his service, seeing him as their guru. So in that aspect we can see that even in the different processes of yoga, there's gradually these different limbs or angas of bhakti that help them gradually get to practicing the full-fledged devotional service to Lord Krishna. So I'll just read something from Bhagavad Gita on this process of yoga meditation. It's from the 6th chapter, which is entitled Dhyana Yoga. So, it's text 23. I'll just read the translation. In the stage of perfection, called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. So here, of course, you know, it's like we have to restrain ourselves from material mental activities. So sometimes we can make a show externally of practicing a specific yoga system or practicing, you know, what some spiritual life externally. But if we haven't really restrained the material or mental activities, you know, consisting of the mind and our intelligence, then we're not really actually taking shelter of a yoga system. Then we're being pretenders. So this point of actually restraining our mental activities from material sense gratification is very important, and it's just one of the first steps that one takes when they practice any yoga system. You know, you have your yamas and niyamas before you actually even start practicing yoga, and before you perform your you start performing your asanas, there are certain things that will help you in terms of being able to subdue the mind, your lifestyle, having everything that you do being regulated, and following, of course, the Vedic literatures. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. So even here in this point, in this system of yoga, one has, you know, the result should be that one should be situated on a joyous platform, that one should be happy. There should be some kind of ananda that comes through the yoga practice. But we can start analyzing in the different, especially in Kali Yuga, because these methods are not recommended, because we just don't have the criteria, gross and subtle, we don't have the criteria to perform this type of yoga. So if you just analyze by our practice of this yoga system, whether it's Dhyana Yoga or whether it's Kundalini Yoga, if we're not, you know, situated in ananda, if we're not becoming blissful from the practice, then we know our application is wrong. Then we know that we're actually not going to perfect it, because this is what's supposed to happen as you gradually practice the system. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This is indeed actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So of course this point, this is just the beginning. When one is after liberation, you know, being freed from material anxieties, that's just the beginning. That's not the highest point in self-realization. So you just get relief from material anxieties, as explained in the Nectar of Devotions, that, you know, the first point in devotional, one of the first characteristics when you practice devotional service is that your material miseries get gradually reduced. So that's the beginning, that's not the end, as some people may come to think, or as some people have concluded by studying the Vedas under unauthorized authority. So I'll just read the translation, certain sections of it, of course. So here it says, by practice of yoga, one becomes gradually detached from material concepts. This is the primary characteristic of the yoga principle. And after this, one becomes situated in trance or samadhi, which means that the yogi realizes the super soul through transcendental mind and sense and intelligence without any of the misgivings of identifying the self with the super self. So this point here of identifying the self with the super self, of course nowadays, you know, everyone is identifying themselves as the super self. So you can see there isn't any firm adherence to the Vedic literature, the Vedic principles, or the system that's been given by different sages. So in the beginning of this canto, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how, you know, the different sages would come together and they would explain different processes by which people gradually elevate their consciousness so that they can start at least coming to the platform of wanting or being accepted to perform devotional service. So gradually people get elevated to a platform where they're not interested in any form of teaching religion, that they actually want the highest goal, they actually want to practice the highest yoga system, which is bhakti or devotional service. So it's not that the sages just came together to discuss one after the other and say this one is the supreme. Actually, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how the yogis or the great sages would congregate together and then they would explain and expand on the different processes which can lead one to the platform of devotional service. So you can see this relationship between the Lord and His devotees, that the Lord and His devotees are always after emphasizing the supremacy of the practice of devotional service and how it comes gradually after some practice. It doesn't come instantly. Yoga practice is more or less based on the principles of the Patanjali system. Some unauthorized commentators try to identify the individual soul with the super soul, and the monists think this to be liberation, but they do not understand the real purpose of the Patanjali system of yoga. There is an acceptance of transcendental pleasure in the Patanjali system, but the monists do not accept this transcendental pleasure out of fear of jeopardizing the theory of oneness. The duality of knowledge and knower is not accepted by the non-dualists, but in this verse, transcendental pleasure realized through transcendental senses is accepted. And this is corroborated by Patanjali Muni, the famous exponent of the yoga system. The great sage says in his Yoga Sutras 434, Purushartha sunyanam gunamam patiprasava kaivalyam sarupa patista vachit shakti yuti. So you hear the difference in what the different processes have tried to explain as liberation. That for a devotee, liberation means that we start engaging in devotional service, whereas in other processes they see liberation, you know, as just being free from material miseries or material contact. So you hear that difference is being made. And it's very interesting how Srila Prabhupada is explaining how originally, you know, Patanjali Muni, the way he explained and the way he wrote out the Yoga Sutras, it was always explanations of how, you know, we're reaching this ananda and bliss and having the understanding between the self and the supreme self, not that all is one, and that even with this knowledge, that we get to realize it after all our senses have become purified. Not just the senses, especially the subtle, the mind and the intelligence have to get purified so that we can actually come to this stage of actually going through the whole system of moving the life is and all these things by performance of asanas like that. So the senses have to become purified, our mind and our intelligence have to become purified, and gradually when we get to realize the Supreme Self, we actually get to see Krishna, because the meditation of course is based on Krishna. And this is what I was just speaking the other day, I think it was with Adrian and Anirudha Prabhu, how in the different yoga schools they go on explaining about how you fix your mind or how you meditate, and they try to explain the eightfold system of Ashtanga Yoga from, you know, the Yama and Niyamas up to Dhyana and Samadhi, but they don't really say what that Samadhi is on. They don't really say what the goal of that Samadhi is. So all these steps people are taking, and the steps that they don't take, of course, the Yama and Niyamas are completely neglected these days in the practice of yoga, because people, that's infringing on people's sense gratification, which is what they're after. Even the yoga practice, quite frankly, these days, is just about mental, you know, like physical gymnastics. The real aspect of yoga, trying to realize ourself and Krishna simultaneously, which is what's supposed to happen with yoga practice, is not really elaborately explained and is not really understood. That's why Srila Prabhupada here points out that you have these unauthorized commentators who speak on the yoga sutras or who speak on different aspects of spirituality, but they're not really authorized because they haven't understood it from a chain of disciplic succession. They haven't understood it from a chain of transcendentalists who themselves are, you know, quite frankly, like really following. And this is why Srila Prabhupada, in this purport here, says, yes, we can, he says here that after saying, explaining how this system of yoga is just not suited for this age that we're living, Srila Prabhupada explained that, you know, we should just stick firmly to the simple, foolproof method of meditation, which is chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And it's interesting how, you know, Srila Prabhupada is just letting us know just how it's much more simple, how foolproof this process of devotional service is, because as we practice it, we get that ananda, we get that bliss, we have the realizations of devotion, of practicing devotional service, which comes through the association we get with the devotees and the spiritual master. I'll just continue reading. This chit shakti or internal potency is transcendental. Purusharta means material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end the attempt to become one with the Supreme. So this is very widespread in the days that we're living now, that in the name of religion or following religious principles, that we become engrossed in sense gratification, economic development, and eventually we want to become one with God. Not really understand that we're servants of God, but we just want to become one with God. This oneness with the Supreme is called Kaivalyam by the monist. But according to Patanjali, this Kaivalyam is an internal or transcendental potency by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position. So once again, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out, you know, the yoga system in its original form has to make us aware of our constitutional position. Not that we're all God or we can become God through meditation, but we're actually, you know, part and parcel of God. And that has to be realized in the yoga system. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, this state of affairs is called Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, or clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. Like I said, this Kaivalyam, or how Srila Prabhupada, this liberation for us starts by practicing devotional service. And the first instruction that we all get by practicing devotional service, of course, is to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. That's the most important instruction we get from the spiritual master. And then by gradually performing devotional service by hearing and chanting, that we actually start cleaning the mirror of the heart. And this is what Srila Prabhupada goes on to discuss, that Lord Chaitanya explained this process of liberation, this process of devotional service, first by quoting Chaitadapanam Marjanam, that this is the beginning phase of practicing devotional service. This clearance is actually liberation, or Bhava Maha Devaka Nirvapanam. The theory of Nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle. After Nirvana, or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities or devotional service to the Lord, known as Krishna consciousness. So after we've all become frustrated with the material energy and we come into the association of devotees, then we start performing real liberation, we start performing devotional service. So it's not that the highest thing is to just merge or perform some yoga, gymnastics, or just free ourselves from material anxieties or material miseries. We should actually get to a point where we start performing devotional service. We start reestablishing the relationship that we have with Krishna. So this elaborate, of course, the elaborate explanation given by Krishna comes because Uddhava has been asking him questions. Uddhava, in the beginning, the first few texts, asked Krishna, you know, the right procedures and the processes that one should follow if they want to start practicing a yoga system. So Krishna is responding to that. And as Krishna first of all states that Bhakti Yoga, of course, is the supreme science, is the highest understanding in the yoga, Krishna then starts explaining this supremacy. And Krishna, in the, I think, the last three or four texts or so, Krishna first starts by explaining the supremacy of his pure devotee, explaining how his pure devotees, you know, capture his heart, how his pure devotees control him by, you know, unmotivated love, by pure bhakti. And then after that, Krishna is explaining how he loves his devotees, how he himself gets to serve his devotees, how he himself gets the dust of the lotus feet of his devotees so that he can serve them. So this is the very, of course, this is a very intricate part of loving exchange between the living entity and the Supreme Lord, that the Lord gets to be a servant of his devotees. And of course in Bhakti Yoga, Krishna is the only enjoyer. Not that we don't enjoy, but when Krishna enjoys, we simultaneously enjoy with him. So the first our first principle, of course, is to please Krishna's senses. Then the other system, Srila Prabhupada explains, you know, with the in text 29 of Karma Yoga, chapter 5 in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Bhoktaram yaya tapasam savaloka maheshwaram suhidam savabhutanam gyapam mam sancham rishyati. So basically this verse explains how, you know, Krishna is the only enjoyer. Whatever it is that we're doing should be directed towards Krishna. If it's austerities, if it's penances, if it's giving in charity, all these things should be done in relationship to Krishna and his, and pleasing his transcendental senses. Whereas we can perform all these activities, we can be hearing and chanting, we can be worshipping certain people, but if that's not aligned with Krishna, if they're not in line with Krishna, then our process of trying to elevate ourselves becomes nullified, because it's not on the spiritual, it's not on the transcendental platform. So the translation reads, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So this, of course, is a peace formula that's been given in the Bhagavad Gita. How once we actually put Krishna in the center, when we understand that Krishna is the only enjoyer, then only then can we actually be peaceful. Once we can do whatever, practice whatever yoga system, and we can really try with our greatest intelligence and mental capacity, but if Krishna is not the enjoyer of all those sacrifices, then we're not going to be happy. We can become elevated to some degree, but that will still either be on the mode of goodness, and the mode of goodness, of course, is controlled by, it's one of the material modes of nature, so that's also limited, that's not transcendental, that still falls within karma, which is what we don't want to accrue in this life. So Krishna is all in joy, and whatever activities that we're performing are meant for him. And this goes very well with the verse that Prabhupada's servants have been explaining here, that yes, there are those people who, you know, you watch Kumbh Mela or you hear the stories from devotees who go to Kumbh Mela about the different yogis who have been recorded to be there for the past 500 years or 400 years, and you can see they do amazing things with their bodies. We can see that, you know, they've increased their lifespan, they look much younger, you know, they can perform all sorts of mental, you know, tricks, and they can do so many interesting things. But of course we understand that it's still just the power of the mind. They can be on the highest level of the material modes of nature, but still that's not on a transcendental platform. And that's also, it's not so much of a selfless desire, because we ourselves are trying to reach this goal, so we're enhancing our existence. We're not trying to know who Krishna is, or we're not trying to elevate ourselves to Krishna. So as the servants of Srila Prabhupada point out, that yes, we can, you know, appreciate the austerities these people are performing, we can appreciate, you know, all these things that they do, but we should just stick to the process that's been given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. You know, there's nothing wrong with the different yoga systems, you know, at specific ages, you know, Sat Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Treta Yuga. There's specific remedies and methods given for realizing Krishna and realizing who we are in relation to Krishna. But the way for us in this age to get there is given by the Supreme Personality himself, who came to actually show us how to do that. So that comes by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, hearing and chanting, associating with devotees, and all the other different processes that the acharyas have been giving us. So we can appreciate, we don't speak down on anyone, but we know where we are at, we know what our position is, and that's where part and parcel of Krishna and our constitutional position, our dharma, is to serve Krishna. You know, the position of, you know, the hand is to put, you know, food in the mouth, to serve the entire body. And if you try to be a stuck up hand, or if you try to be an independent hand, then gradually we start diminishing. So if we try to shy away from our natural identity, to shy away from our original identity, then gradually over time we dwindle, or we just stay stagnant on one spot, and we don't really elevate our consciousness. And that happens a lot when you're on the mode of goodness, that you're above everyone else, and you become attached to that mode, not knowing that we have to transgress that mode and go higher. So we should just stick, as it's explained here, to the process of devotional service. And the most important instruction for us is that we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the medicine for this age, and which is very easily performed if you compare it to the other yoga systems. And in this way, Krishna is just, of course, Uddhava is not a conditioned soul like us. So Uddhava, and as we see in the different parts of the Bhagavatam, different personalities put themselves in different situations so that we can see how to act. So Uddhava is inquiring from his spiritual master how best to understand the different yoga systems. And of course, for us, for preaching, we have to understand what else is out there that's trying to attract people, and we have to figure out ways and means that we can let people know that actually the most important aspect of life, the most important aspect of a human life, is to inquire about the real self, not how to become the best charity giver, or how to become the best feminist, or all these things that people, all these isms that people are into. That the highest welfare work is to distribute Krishna consciousness, and that's to educate people on their real identity. That's the whole point of us preaching and giving out the books. So this is what Srila Prabhupada has always wanted, and this is what he's establishing in this chapter. This is what Krishna is establishing in this chapter through Uddhava, through the relationship between the spiritual master and disciple. We get to know the intricacies of devotional service, and we get to know how devotional service is the topmost yoga. And that we should just stick to that process as given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was on this planet. So I'll just stop there and ask if there's any questions or comments or corrections.
Yes,
Mahatma Prabhu.
First of all, in coming, what you said is that what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, prema pamartho maha, by chanting,
yep,
you can get the love of Godhead. That is the easiest and most best way, most appropriate for Prabhupada and given us. That was the comment. But one question I had was, when I was in Sydney 30 years back, I had a kuli.
You had a what?
A kuli.
A kuli.
Kuli is friend.
Okay.
Kuli.
Yes, okay.
And he told me that he used to go to Bombay every year, and he used to learn all these Muladhara, Kundalini techniques and all that. So he was a very brilliant scholar, and he should travel really, you know, more now. So what is Kundalini and what is Loli? Can you explain it more?
What is Kundalini and what is what?
Muladhara
chakra. Well, the Muladhara chakra, that's one of the base chakra. I'll just read here. It's one of the seven primary chakras, and is associated with, you know, how the different chakras have different colors and they're associated with different qualities.
Yeah,
so this is
too fast.
Okay, so the Muladhara chakra, I'll just find it simple. This is basically the root or the support chakra. So it has qualities of the earth like stability, patience. So all these different chakras, they enhance certain attributes or they enhance certain things about the body. So when in yoga practice, you get, like the verse is speaking about how you move the life as through the seven main chakras, that means we actually stabilize all these different areas of the body. And once you've stabilized, you know, the aspect of earth and water, when everything is in complete balance, you start raising all the life airs and moving the energies properly. Because if there's blockages, you know, some people sometimes die from trying to practice Kundalini yoga, because, you know, you're using your life airs, and that's not a joke. So you gradually perform all these, you know, pranayams and moving the life force up, and that's basically supposed to get you off the body concept of life. And beyond that, you know, when you start, the higher you go with the chakras, you know, you start focusing on the outgoing and incoming breath, and you're chanting Om at the same time, and you have to merge all these. So it's quite a difficult thing to do. And these are the systems, you know, that are practiced by different yogis who'd go under the water for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, and still reach perfection, and some of them don't reach perfection, or they almost do and then they fall down. So it's when practiced properly, there are different yogis who have actually practiced this Ashtanga yoga, and in the Bhagavatam, the Prachetas and all the different yogis, all the different rishis, of course. But, you know, for us, trying to really perfect the whole, you know, moving the life airs, we can't even sit without squeaking for like 10 minutes, so it becomes troublesome.
The chakra also relates to psychological aspects, for example, the Muladhara chakra connects with tribal identification. So the base chakra, the root chakra, connects with tribal stuff. For example, like your belief systems, your tribe is shared, it's in there, and like different tribes so that have different identifications with it. And then also when you move up the chakras, the identification becomes more subtle. For example, the other one, the next month is the one that the groin area, the groin area. So that's what people identify with sexuality. And then next comes like the eye kind of identification, and next comes emotional ones. So the chakras are connected with different aspects of ourselves, how we identify ourselves. You can see people with like kind of the lower consciousness, they identify themselves with like deeper chakras. For example, tribal chakras, like keyboard, it's very powerful because, for example, like, this identification with it gets stimulated when people go into war. It's a very powerful chakra, and right? It can be used in a very destructive way, and people stimulate it, and they can react to us if it's identified with it.
So that's chakras, there you go, insightful. Any other question? Okay. Grand Shri Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Shri Bhagavatam Ki.